authorizing the act of planning serious crimes such as terror attacks. The upper house of the Diet passed the bill into law on Thursday morning with a majority vote from the governing Liberal Democratic and Kōmeitō parties, along with Nippon Ishin and other lawmakers. The law aims to thwart the conspiracy of terror attacks and other organized crimes. The new legislation criminalizes actions including raising money or procuring materials during the planning of serious crimes. It penalizes all members of any group proven to be plotting serious crimes, from hijackings to drug smuggling. During a debate prior to the vote, the LDP said that terror organizations were now globalized, which means that anywhere in the world is a potential target. It added that they should recognize terrorism as a real impending threat and take all necessary measures to ensure safety when hosting the 2020 Tokyo Olympics and Paralympics and other events. In response, the Democratic Party said that the greatest public concern about the law was the arbitrary investigation by authorities and the infringement on the civil rights and personal freedom of individuals.
If you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
Oh, brethren and sistren, I got a dedication going out to our buddy, the Angry Indian, because this will set him to kicking furniture. Jesse Lee Peterson, brethren and sistren. Jesse Lee Peterson got on his tax-free radio program to sound the trumpets of praise for the comrade kumquat, for the tangerine Tiberius, for Commodore Cantaloupe. You know, that guy that Brain voted for. And so many other trumpanzees. What is Jesse Lee Peterson proud of? Why, Jesse Lee Peterson is proud of Marcus Aurelius for shoving his way past the Prime Minister of Montenegro. Let's go to the recording, shall we?
You've heard me say over and over and over again since day one of President Trump, when he first announced that he was running office, and he's going to put a big, beautiful wall around the borders. He's going to make America. I said then that this man would be president. I had no idea that the light that's within him would be shining on the darkness, and the darkness would come out in the world.
Yeah.
I had no idea that he was he exposed the darkness. And he sleeping mules. He has those weaklings tried to get in front of him. Oh, shoot. He pushed them out of the way.
Yeah.
Obama would have stood behind in the back. Did like this.
I should grab that video for you.
I'm the baddest man, and a new sheriff is in town.
Did you see him dress down all those NATO leaders?
Oh, yeah. Y'all better go sit down. Obama's not here anymore.
That was very funny.
White power.
Yes, sir.
White power.
No, really. This really is. I probably should have issued the hockey puck warning, shouldn't I? This is Jesse Lee Peterson, African American, upstanding Bible believing, Christ centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual minister. chanting white power on his tax-free religion industry broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, dang it, Angry, of all the times that you'd be absent, because this guy's going to get... you're going to love this extra special double plus good. Oh, there's Angry! Good. Jesus fucking Christ, Angry says. We're only getting started.
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Stand up and fight.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Indian land! Indian land! Indian land! Indian land!
You guys have no jurisdiction here.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians, all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. White man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet radio for smart Aboriginal.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Inteligente de Indigena.
We dialogue. We correct misperceptions. That is what makes Trump acceptable to so many white people who feel, damn, I can't be myself now. I can't say what I really feel, I'll pay a political price. So Mr. Trump says, to heck with that. I'll tell you what's on my mind. And that is freeing a lot of people that like what he is doing. So the politicians today, I looked at the many Republicans and Democrats that are trying to win the nomination of their party. And it says to me, you know, it's like I don't want to be vulgar, but it's like you, in any major city, you see women undressed, showing their wares for a John to buy them. And it's like politicians who don't have money but have ideas, and they parade themselves before rich and powerful people to get money, apparently for their ideas that the rich agree with. But the moment that they become what they're looking to become, they find that the rich have an agenda for them, that the rich have something to ask of them, like the John asks of the prostitute. And that's one of the things that I admire about Mr. Trump, because he told them all, I don't want your money. And when a politician does not want money from the rich. He's freer than the others to really do good for the masses of the people. And I think that today we are in the midst of the darkest hour in American history. And so if we don't make the right move with the right people at the right time, the America that we know, we're not going to see it become great again.
Internet radio for smarter originals.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the Fourth World from within occupied North America, this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along, soliton and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. You have tuned in to Indigenous news, thought, and analyses concerning issues that matter to original peoples and other communities across the world living under neo-colonial, neo-imperial, theological, racialist, homophobic, misogynist, neoclassist, neoliberal, neoliteral, neo-fascist governments and societies, and those individuals and communities living under severe anti-environmental oppression. This is your radio program. I am your host, The Angry Indian, Editor-in-Chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blogging to the people of the Fourth World from aboriginalnewswire.tumblr.com and aboriginalpress.wordpress.com, as well as our main news portal, ang-newswire.blogspot.com. And along with my co-executive producer and master studio engineer, Ms. Guadalupe Morales, we welcome you back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, the official broadcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service, coming straight at you from Everyman Studios in Multnomah Nation Territory. Where do I begin? There's a few things I want to talk about. We see what happened here. There were four, today's Friday, but this past Wednesday, there were four mass shootings in one day. A white supremacist, apparently, who worked at the UPS somewhere in California, he decided to go in and kill some folks, kill himself. There were two other shooting incidents in different parts of the country. But what everybody is talking about is Steve Scalise, the Republican, the third most important Republican, I suppose, in the House, right? In the U.S. system of government, for my European and South American, African and Asian listeners, it's one of the branches of government here. You got the Congress and you got the Senate, and he's one of the top Republicans, right? He's the, what did he say, Luke? It's the third whip, right? I'm not even going to get into trying to explain that shit. Yeah. Now, you know, it's fucked up when anybody gets shot. I don't give a fuck what the circumstances are. I mean, I felt bad when JT Reddy, a racist, neo-Nazi, this motherfucker said that Hitler was a great civil rights leader. He was down with the Republican Party. He was running for Republican office when he decided. Oh, he also went right, Lube. He was on the border too, with the Minutemen, down there rounding up people who were trying to get into the country over the Rio Grande. Okay, so I have no, there's no love lost between me and him, because he's dead. He killed his entire fucking family. I don't even think that the child that he killed was his. It was his girlfriend's daughter, his living girlfriend's daughter. But he killed the mother, he killed the girlfriend, he killed the child, and then that punk motherfucking Nazi killed his goddamn self like Hitler. If you believe that Hitler killed himself in the bunker. There's pretty good evidence that he did. Went to Argentina. But that's not what we're talking about right now. What we're talking about is, here we have violence. More violence, right? But this time there's a spin on it. Because it turns out that the shooter, the assailant, who is dead, he's gone too. So we'll never really know what the fuck was going on with him, because he's not alive anymore to speak for himself. Not that he was a nice person anyway. Apparently he beat the shit out of his wife, He fucked up, I think, at least one of his daughters. He's been locked up for this. He has a history of beating women. He has a history of waving guns at people in shite. It just happens that he isn't a Republican, or wasn't a Republican. Like I said, he's off this mortal coil. He doesn't exist anymore. He's now just a cipher. But he's a cipher that's being used by the Republican Party, that's being used by the NRA, that's hypocritically so, being used by the alt-right. Yeah, I know, the alt-right, whatever. These are the alt-right. Call them what the fuck they are. All right? This is the new alternative. Fucking, you know, they would like to start a fourth Reich, but just don't know how to fucking go about it. You know, they can't figure out if they want to do cosplay in terms of Viking slash Valhalla shit, or some, like, you know, rethink on Captain America, who it turns out now is a Nazi, right? So, you know, here we got a lot of craziness going on. You know, there was all kinds of silly string and shite happening at Evergreen College. And as I said in my interview with Malachi Daniels, otherwise known as Venonian, otherwise known as Black Panther. Yeah, we're going to talk about that a little bit too, because there were some comments about that. Lupe and her husband attended the, was there a particular name for that, Lupe? And I really wish you get on the fucking mic sometimes. You know, I would really have appreciated it if you did this, that I have to relate it. What? Yeah, was there a particular, the Battle for Paul? I mean, that's what I heard, but is that really what is being called? The Battle for Paulding, right? Well, I haven't seen anyone who was connected to that. I've only been dealing with black people the past several days, and I'll probably end up talking about that and my experiences with that. You know, because I'm going to try to not go on too many fucking tangents. But right now, let's just talk about the Alexandria shooting real quick, because it turns out that this cat was a Bernie Sanders supporter. Turns out that he was part of the progressive political persuasion, right? Not a Democrat. He was down with Jill Stein, who, you know, I have my questions about Jill Stein. If you like Jill Stein, if you're one of these black libertarians that really likes Jill Stein, or black green and really, really, really likes Jill Stein, I've said it before, I say it again. I said it to her on motherfucking line. She is welcome to come on this show and explain, you know, why she was sitting there with, yeah, I know she's already talked about this. No, not really. Why was she sitting there with Flynn? Did they just happen to be sitting at the same table? You know, that's possible. That can fucking happen. But I don't see why we should let her off the hook when you look at the investments that she has. And when she went to Russia, she had a lot to say about American human rights abuses, which is fine. But she didn't have a fucking thing to say about the human rights abuses of Russia, right? Nothing about their neo-Nazi fucking movement. Nothing about that, the Putin fucking government. You know, well, all of them, actually. You know, the various times he's been in office. You know, in the leadership positions there in Russia. Which I had to explain to some young black men is not the fucking Soviet Union anymore. They were under 25. It took me 2 fucking hours to convince them. 2 fucking hours to convince them that the Soviet Union does not fucking exist anymore. Putin is our friend, man. The Russians have always been down with us. That was in the past, my man. Paul Robeson is gone. Speak to Paul Robeson Jr. about the new motherfucking Russia. This is not what was going on in the fucking past. And even though they didn't particularly like black people in Russian society, necessarily, they tolerated Pushkin, what have you, you know. But, I mean, let's get down to fucking brass facts. The Russians have a fucking problem with race and always goddamn have. Think of Yugoslavia. There was always ethnic fucking strife there. What kept it from getting bad was socialism. What kept it from getting bad is socialism. Now, we can talk about the fucking faults of left-wing economics, of left-wing politics, of the left-wing habit that it shares along with the you know, the fellows on the right, that if somebody doesn't agree with the platform, if somebody doesn't just, you know, move in lockstep with everything, you know, within a revolutionary, constant revolutionary fucking mode, then they must be put up against the motherfucking wall. Now, I've said it here before because this also was relevant. I mean, I'm going to try not to go on too many tangents. But, you know, this is also relevant. There's a lot of motherfucking talk out here, as is usually happens with a lot of these goddamn things, with a lot of brothers and a lot of fucking left-wing white guys talking shit about revolution. You need to motherfucking stop. I saw an exchange that Li Fang from The Intercept, which I have my doubts about at times, especially after this last girl, Lee Winner, got caught up in this shit. You know, I mean, I don't know what the fuck her politics are, but they, you know, you would think after Snowden, who is being protected by Russia because Russia's using him to hurt the United States intelligence community, you know, and the politics over here. I mean, if you don't think that's what the fuck is going on, then why haven't they sent him back? I'm not saying he's working for them, and he knows he's being used. He's one of these libertarians. Look, I deal with libertarians all the fucking time. My best goddamn pal is a fucking libertarian. Doesn't mean that we agree on every fucking thing. You know, and I can vouch for this cat. I mean, he's one of the fucking few. Actually, I would say, like, the libertarian shit is about 50-50 fucking in terms of, you know, really unapologetic neo-Nazis. Right? And passive neo-Nazis. And, you know, he's trying to follow the libertarian thing because he's admitted to me. Where else is he going to go with his political beliefs? But at the same time, he's like, I'm falling into the fucking hands of bigoted, cowardly, gun-toting sons of bitches. And it's like, and I keep telling him, you know, because he and I, there's a couple of links that we have, you know. I've talked about this. When I first fucking registered to vote decades ago, right, because I did my goddamn military registration first. Went to the fucking post office like they told you to do at 18. You get your selective service goddamn card. I also motherfucking registered to vote, and I registered as a libertarian. And I'll tell you why. Because the literature that I was seeing at the time, like I said, we're going back some, right? The literature I was seeing at the time, the choice for me politically was either go with the Libertarian Party or go with Michael Harrington's Socialist Party. The only problem was Michael Harrington's Socialist Party didn't have a candidate where I was voting in my district. And you have to remember, I was only 18. So I had no life experience, no practical experience, and I was living in a black community, right? Where the fuck was I going to understand that the libertarians are, you know, really full of shit? And at that time, actually, that really wasn't the case. I mean, you know, there were slight links to the John Birch Society, but then, like I was talking about that 50-50 thing, you know, a lot of the fuckers, the handful of people that I met that were libertarian, you know, two were white, one was black, they didn't talk about gun rights, you know, they weren't talking about the Klan. They were saying to me that racism was wrong and shit like that, and that one of them, it was so long ago, but said something about that the Democratic or the Republican Party are not liable to give a person like me a chance, you know, because it was probably the black guy. He's like, you know, you're mixed and you know you're not going to fit in on either side, blah blah blah, which was true, which is one of the reasons why I wasn't looking at the Republican and Democratic thing, because neither of them were answering what was happening with me at the time. And I tell you what else, it was the religious tone too that was being thrown about at that time. And when I first voted, it was not for a presidential thing, it was for like local alderman seats and city council and what have you like that. And there were actually a couple of socialists and like a couple of communists, you know, this used to happen, you know, at least on the East Coast. I don't know where else. I mean, they would get like 5, you know, votes out of 10,000 or something. But you know, I have voted what I thought was my conscience. But at the same time, and this is why my criticisms, you know, to a lot of black folks, a lot of Native American folks, a lot of people of color in general, you know, and folks get really defensive really quick, but they're not listening, which is something else I want to talk about. You know, I didn't know what the fuck I was voting for. I was voting for what the literature said. That didn't mean that that's what their actual program was about. That took time and experience for me to fucking figure that out. And like I said, my pal, yeah, he's a white guy. He's married to an Asian woman. And unlike the other motherfucking white guys I've known that were married to Asian women, I mean, and I'm not being funny about that. I'm generalizing with intelligence. I'm just being straight the fuck out. A lot of the white cats that I've known over the years, especially here, have been married to Filipinos, and you know that I'm part fucking Ilocano, you know, that they do not respect their fucking wives. They do not. They do not respect their wives, and they don't really respect their fucking children. They still talk down to them. They talk down about them. They relegate mistakes that they might make or personality conflicts with their being Asian. And when I say that, I'm saying they're not talking about it culturally. They're talking about DNA. You know, which is the same thing with a lot of black folks, you know, who get upset when I use terms like black and fascism, when I use terms like African and revisionist history or revisionist Afrocentrism. You know, and it's like they jump at me and they say, but wait a goddamn minute. Did you read the text? It doesn't matter. You know, I saw her, you know, the title was fucked up on his side. It's like, what? So what you're saying is that revisionism is impossible in the black community. That there's no way that people would make up a fucking history. That you know, that there's no way that we would fabricate. You know, I mean, come on. I grew up in the fucking what? Born in the 60s. Came of consciousness in the fucking 70s, and one of the first things I remember being told in those African consciousness, you know, the meetings and groups and the community events and shit, was that every black man and woman was a king and a queen back in Africa. That we all came from royalty because they only took the best. Now, some of you who are old enough, who are black, who grew up in the fucking community, know what the fuck I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. But even then, if your family wasn't conscious, if you weren't really, you know, paying attention to shit, then maybe you don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. Because see, that's where colorism comes into play. And that was one of the reasons why I went libertarian, because, you know, I had a whole lot of Republican. Yeah. And there were black Republicans in my community. Like I just said, you know, it was a black libertarian I met. That's why I figured maybe I did have a choice. But the Democrats around us, I mean, they shook hands. They did a lot of smiling. I mean, I remember that. And I met a couple of them, you know, and my mother, you know, my mother and my father, but most so my mother, because she was a community activist, a conservative community activist. She dealt with rent controls and shit like that, primarily. She was not out here yelling black power. You know, she was talking about rent controls and affordable food. And she was, you know, really down with pushing programs that the Panthers had started in terms of, you know, breakfast programs and shit like that. That's how I learned my activism. But at the same time, if you asked her, like, are you a progressive, or had, say, put her with the Democrats, she would have got mad. You know, my father's family voted Republican. I suppose up until the 70s, up until, you know, like, you know, when the mid to late 60s George Wallace shift happened. Now, he was a racist son of a bitch. He was born one and he died one. He was always a fucking bigot. He was a racist and a bigot. And, you know, and we talked about this before, too. And I suppose even with people of color, got to be goddamn reminded when you're making your motherfucking arguments. Understand the words that you're motherfucking using. Because I this is what I'm talking about here. Oh, don't lecture me. I just fucking said, you know, I talked to two fucking, you know, yesterday, 25-year-olds. Conscious, political, they got their dreads. Fuck the system, revolution, who fucking wanted to argue with me that Russia was communist. Still, that is the same sort of fucking government and society, and that they've always been the fucking black man's friend. And it took 2 hours of me being patient. I'm giving myself credit for this, because I couldn't understand why, you know, after what, about an hour, what I tell you, it was about an hour, right? I'm saying, what's the fucking point in trying to this and to just walk away? And something made me sit there and motherfucking go on with this. And it took going through Google and goddamn Wikipedia, because they question everything on Wikipedia. Then they question everything on Google. I mean, Wikipedia is pretty fucking accurate. You know, I mean, when it gets fucked with, it's obvious. You can, there are so many goddamn associated sites that where you can tell whether the page has been changed and what was changed and when and who did it. So you expect certain politicians, like if you look at the Duke of Windsor's fucking Wikipedia page, it doesn't really talk too much about his Nazi shit. Matter of fact, I don't think it mentions too much at all other than they were allegations. I mean, it doesn't say too much at all about that motherfucker, about any of the other bullshit he did. Illegal currency fucking exchange, treason, you know, giving Ribbentrop and the fucking Italians and shit and the Spanish and Portuguese fascists, all kinds of information that they were giving back to Hitler. The motherfucker and Wallace Simpson, his chick, they were both goddamn Nazis. Wallace Simpson was fucking Nazis before she even got to the fucking Duke of Windsor. And it turns out that she was fucking Ribbentrop when she was fucking the Duke. And obviously he was okay with it because he was a fucking freak apparently. So, you know, this is that, you know, well, that depends on who you ask, right? The German royal family, the Duke of Oldenburg, who was also a fucking priest. He claimed this. They told the American FBI this shit. So, you know, hey, look, where am I going with this? Is that I made a decision and made a choice and flipped the lever because I thought I knew what the fuck I was doing. I thought that I knew what the fuck was happening. And if I remember correctly, even after talking to my mother about this shit, who I believe said that she voted Democrat, as she used to, that she talked shit, but then she voted Democrat anyway. Motherfucker, I think the last time my parents voted for a natural Republican was Eisenhower. You know, and then since then, they have been, nobody liked Truman in my family. Nah. So, you know, because he was a racist son of a bitch. You know, it's like, no, why? 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 But any case, what I'm getting down to here is all this talk of revolution and all this talk of fucking, you know, fuck all white people and all this kind of shit, you know, really save it. See, all that Jacobin language, you know, it sounds cool when it's coming off the lip. See, it sounds cool talking in the motherfucking locker room, talking all that shit. In the real goddamn world, you have no political motherfucking program. You have no readiness motherfucking system. You don't have your politics down straight. You know, you're arguing more on television, the internet, radio fucking media for the right to define yourself as a nigga than you are about fighting for fucking, you know, the proper education and training and organization that would make it necessary that you could be motherfucking independent, where you could actually legitimize that kind of motherfucking chit-chat. At this motherfucking point, really, a lot of y'all need to just fucking stop. Because, and there's always the same characters. It's the really, really young, angry people and the old motherfuckers that have been saying that shit for years but don't actually do anything but point and send others out there so that they can get busted. They ain't get a motherfucking record. They can never get a goddamn job. Never get any, you know, decent fucking education in a college and shit because they got a fucking record. Now, fuck up your housing. To send people out there to do craziness. I'm not saying don't fucking protest. Do not take me out of fucking context. I don't appreciate it. I'm not telling people not to fucking argue and protest. What the fuck do you think this goddamn broadcast is about? All these goddamn websites. Loopy and I don't do this shit for fun. We're spending money for this and don't ask anybody for any motherfucking thing. We don't take swag, nothing. We totally are fucking independent. We're out here trying to give you some fucking food for thought, man. But I'm getting tired of you motherfuckers out here because, you know, I got white liberals telling me not to be political to tone it down because of what the fuck happened here to Scalise, who is a fucking, you know, friend of David Duke. He spoke to his fucking organization. He's a friend of the fucking KKK. You know, he doesn't like goddamn gay people, even though two cops saved his ass and every fucking buddy else there and got shot up in the fucking process of doing it. One of them is a fucking married lesbian, but he can't stand gay people, can't stand black people. So, you know, I'm not sitting here losing any motherfucking sleep because he got shot. I mean, apparently, you know, he's going to make it. I don't know why he's in critical condition and had three surgeries after being shot in the hip. Unless that shit really hit him in the fucking pelvis and fucked up his, the ball socket in there. But, I mean, hey, I don't, yeah, that's a whole mess of fucking blood vessels and nerves and all that kind of shit. I'm sure he's in a whole lot of fucking pain, but he's a fucking supporter of, you know, white racism. So why the fuck should I lose any sleep? I'm not going to. So, you know, for the white liberals that are upset with me and those of you who listen to this show that are upset with me and shit that will see me on the street tomorrow, look, man. You know, or maybe even later on tonight, because I'm going out to dinner. Look, hey, miss me with that shit. I'm not going to fucking sit here and feel sorry and pray for Steve Scalise, because he got shot by another motherfucking white homosexual. I'm not. And just because this cat backed Jill Stein, and just because he reluctantly backed Hillary Clinton, because they're putting all this weight on Sanders. Yeah, now look, there's all kinds of shit we can talk about with Sanders. The gun shit that he supports in Vermont, some of his national security votes are not fucking nice at all. There's a couple of environmental things that, you know, I thought it was hypocritical, but that's just me, right? I'm not from the state of Vermont, which is what he's supposed to represent. The whole prison labor thing, yeah, he's doing that over there. Get him on those things. But if you're going to say that he's as bad as Hillary, you're fucking crazy. If you're going to say that he's as hypocritical as Jill Stein, as far as I know, he doesn't have the investments that Jill Stein does. And Jill Stein is a fucking radical. Jill Stein will show up any motherfucking where to get herself some prey. To get herself a fucking Hail Mary, right? To get herself some prayer. Fucking, she showed up at the Standing Rock thing to do some fucking graffiti that other people ended up being charged with. So, you know, it's like, come on. Come on. Like I said, I voted libertarian before as an 18-year-old because I was looking at the literature and really didn't know what the fuck they were about. I'm sure there's plenty of fucking 18-year-olds that are white that will vote for the John Birch Society, not, you know, if they just look at their literature. Because it's not the Klan, right? It's the John Birch Society. They just say that they're anti-communist. They don't say that they're anti-black, but of course they're fucking anti-black. I mean, if you really want to get down to brass tacks, you got Sinn Féin and you got the Irish Republican Army. You know, pick your flavor. You know, provisional IRA, new IRA, socialist IRA, pro-Nazi IRA. You know, pick one. There's so many to pick from. I mean, you can ask Peter King, the Republican over here from the East Coast. I forget exactly where he represents. He's a IRA supporter, and he's like totally against Muslim terrorism. But he supported and defended and codified, you know, Irish nationalist fucking terrorism for decades. You think there's a contradiction here? I do. And I support Irish independence. You know, I have no issue with Sinn Féin. Or at least the modern Sinn Féin any fucking way. I mean, they've admitted to their Nazi past. But you got to remember, the fucking movement is just that. It's a movement. I just finished saying, you got provisional IRA. You got new IRA. You got the socialist fucking IRA. There are communist IRA. They don't fucking get along with each other. I mean, you got IRA that will strangle the local businesses over there in Northern Ireland and the six counties, and you got others that ask for fucking donations, that ask for help. The others just tell them, this is what the fuck you're going to do. Period. There's no discussion. There's no goddamn debate. You know, so you get a couple of black revolutionaries that will hear some shit like that, and basically will hear an African revolutionary in Africa say some shit like that. Like, they'll quote a line from Mugabe, you know, quoting something from the IRA. Real talk. They'll do that, but they don't understand the goddamn context. You know, and if you talk to them about the IRA, they can't tell you. They want to talk about the Black Panther Party all day and don't know that the Black Panther Party had liaison with the IRA for political reasons. That the American Indian Movement had liaison with the IRA for political reasons. Right? You know, does this mean that racially and ethnically, you know, they necessarily got along? No. I just said political reasons. But the Black Panther Party was organized. They had an ideology. They had a platform. They had programs. They moved in a political fashion. Right? The New African movement had a president. Went to Tanzania. Went to China. Went to Cuba. Represented. You had Black Panther Party for Self-Defense representatives all over Africa, in mainland China. You know, so you couldn't really go to South America, right? You know, because it's just too much fascism. Pinochet, Uruguay, Paraguay, Chile, right? You know, Argentina. So couldn't go down there. Couldn't go down there. Mexico too, kind of waffly, right? Couldn't go down. So do you go to Cuba and then vamp to someplace else? You know, I mean, Che Guevara went to, he died in Bolivia. But, you know, he was in Africa, too. See, you know, that's having a system. That's having a program. You know, I mean, okay, let's take Cuba, for example. You know, because it's hard to explain to a lot of fucking people who think that they know what's going on, that Fidel Castro was not a communist at first. He was a Democrat. The CIA actually tried to buy him for $50 million, and he said no. Because he's like, I want to be fucking independent. You know, but what ended up happening? The only communist that was in that group, you know, in that entire fucking group was Che Guevara, right? You know, he was the only real fucking communist. He pushed that. And anybody who has done any fucking study on Che knows that Che was an aggressive, single-minded person who could also be a bully. And he fucking pushed people into communism. You know, I mean, he taught Castro that shit. But you know, if you really fucking pay attention to the revolution and the fact that there were four different separate groups that were fighting, that eventually narrowed down to two and eventually narrowed down to one because of Che Guevara. The idea that this will all come under our umbrella because we're the ones that are going to, you know, run everything at the end of this shit. The others are fighting for liberation and, you know, they had agreements. And the idea was that they would work together. But when they got into Havana, supposedly the people chose Fidel. I'm not disputing that. I don't think anybody else disputes that. The American William Morgan, who went down and fought with him, he fought in Escambray. He made it really clear that the slide to communism came much fucking later. You know, after the Bay of Pigs, they were like, well, then fuck it. You know, we might as well move towards Russia. I mean, how many fucking different times? I mean, the CIA tried to bump him a few goddamn times. They have Frank Sturgis all the way up in this goddamn crew. They were infiltrated from the fucking beginning. Right? So he made a political decision to slide over to Orthodox communism. Because, hey, being a Democrat obviously wasn't fucking working. Not with the U.S., you know, trying to overturn everything you were fucking doing, trying to take back what they believed to be theirs. What happened in the Belgian Congo, which became the Democratic Republic of the fucking Congo? See, they talk about Mugabe because Mugabe talks about hating white people all day. Why don't we talk about Patrice Lumumba, who didn't talk like that? Or Frantz Fanon, who didn't talk like that? You know, married a white French woman. You know, we're talking about intellectual fucking, black freedom. You know, not this scare all the white people and make them grovel, you know, for 500 years of bullshit and for the personal things that have happened to me. I mean, it'll make you feel good for a few minutes, man. But in the long run, you cannot build a fucking nation on that. You cannot build a structure on that. Look at Africa. Look at Zimbabwe. You keep telling yourself, oh, Mugabe's doing something right. No, he isn't. He smashes all of his goddamn political fucking opponents. Are you kidding me? There's no fucking freedom in Africa. Are you fucking kidding me? Look at what happened at the goddamn shootout of all the labor fucking people in South Africa by black South African police under Zuma. What the fuck are you talking about? We got to be honest. You know, when people talking revolution, okay, revolution to get what? Just to hurt white folks? Okay, go ahead, hurt them. Hurt them all, right? And then what? Do you know how to run this motherfucking machine? No, you don't. No, you don't. And you can't keep putting it on fucking white people forever. I'm really, really sick of this motherfucking talk, man. You know, I mean, light-skinned blacks who are out here kicking fucking ass when it comes to fucking politics, fighting for all of us. Colin Kaepernick, Jesse Williams, they get called half a nigger, piss color. They're not really black. They don't have a right to speak for me. They don't go through the same shit we go through. Well, that's a goddamn lie. We get racially profiled. This maybe not to the same fucking degree a lot of you do. You know, we still have to deal with the same fucking problems. We still have to deal with the same fucking prejudices. And when they realize that they can't buy you, they stomp on you worse than they do the fucking brothers. Matter of fact, they tell the dark skin group, hey, you know what? He said such and such about you. I know this because this happened to me. But y'all are talking about revolution, right? Because of Philando Castile. Well, that's pretty funny because we've had a whole bunch of fucking people killed. And you kept talking about revolution and not a goddamn thing fucking happened. And you don't listen or pay attention to what's happening outside your own motherfucking cipher, right? So, you know, why don't we look again at what the fuck is happening, what I started off with. We look at the Alexandria goddamn shooting and, you know, this white bigot, friend of the Klan, friend of David Duke, gets shot in the fucking hip. Two black cops get fucked up saving his goddamn life, and everybody else there, they get shot up. One of them, well, they're both black.
One is gay, married to her fucking partner, and, you know, we're worried about the left wing being violent. The left wing coming after people. The left wing can't be trusted. The left wing should be stomped down upon, even though Jeremy Christian, you know, kills two, stabs a third, runs around yelling white power in court. But, you know, not a problem. We had the Mile Herd shit happen up here. No. Fascists. They pull guns on federal fucking troops, federal officers and shit. They scare the goddamn sheriff's family out of fucking town. The prosecutor of the fucking area scare them the fuck out of town. And, but you know, no problems, right? You had Dylan Roof, no problems. John Lee Hauser, no problems. Sean DeFord, I can go on. So now the mainstream is taking this step. Well, you know, we got to worry about the fucking left, even though the Department of Homeland Security comes out with a motherfucking report, which you can find at Reason.com, actually. They have the entire fucking report because for whatever reason, the New York Times, they published the article on it. So did Time.com, but they did not publish the fucking report because they didn't. The Republicans don't want anybody reading it. Remember, John Boehner was losing his goddamn bowels. You know, on the fucking floor of the House talking about, you know, this was unfair to Republicans and shit, even though it was factually fucking correct. If anything, they left a whole lot of fucking shit out. They didn't mention neo-Nazis. They didn't even mention white supremacists. They only talked about the sovereign citizen motherfuckers. You know, the homosexual types. Because every time they run into fucking cops, they threaten to shoot them. But they're white people, so, you know, and they vote Republican. So, you know, those are my constituents, man. You know, come on, Bubba, you can't really do this. So the entire fucking conversation, the entire context of all this has now been turned. So as you motherfuckers are out here talking revolution when you really don't mean it. Oh, but Malcolm X said, yeah, and Malcolm X also said that you don't know what the fuck a revolution is. Do you need me to play the fucking audio? You don't know. You're just running your fucking mouths. And what you're going to end up doing is getting people fucking killed because somebody's going to do something goddamn stupid and they're going to use that as an excuse for another crackdown. But of course, if you're one of these motherfuckers or he's telling us not to do anything, you can kiss my motherfucking ass. That is not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is if you are going to fucking do something that's going to end up with a beneficial fucking outcome. If you just want to go and kick white people in the motherfucking ass because you're mad, then say that's what it is. Don't say that that's a revolution. That's not a fucking revolution. That's a riot. And I'm not supporting them. I'm not backing fucking white society with this shit. You know? I mean, you know, in my heart of hearts, yeah, white society, you know, collectively needs a symbolic punch in the fucking nose. But going out here whipping up these young guys to, you know, to do something fucking stupid is bullshit. Because what ends up happening is they jump on some poor ass fucking white guy that probably doesn't fucking hate anybody. You know, but he looks scary, so they jump on him. And I can say this because I fucking have done something that these motherfuckers will not do. They will not walk up to a fucking Klansman and ask him what the fuck his problem is. They will not motherfucking challenge, because I said this the last couple of shows. You know, well, the last show, the motherfucking Portland shit happens coming from the fucking mall. You're going to tell me on that goddamn MAX train there were no fucking people of color, there were no motherfucking young black men? Give me a fucking break, man. I don't believe that. I don't believe that because I have seen that video of the white guy who robbed Ricky Best, the veteran that got killed. And I have to say something else. I don't remember his name right now, but the other young man, the Buddhist, the practicing Buddhist who lost his life, his last fucking words were, tell everybody on the train I love them. But I noticed that a whole lot of fucking white liberals are not out here fighting for that shit, right? I noticed that the military fucks in the Tea Party, in the Republican Party, in alt-right, they don't have anything to say about a white veteran being killed by a white supremacist. Well, they didn't say anything about Richard Collins III, who was the black lieutenant who was killed by a white supremacist either. So here you have two military motherfuckers who are killed by white people who are espousing pro-Trump, white supremacy shit, but we really need to worry about the left and Antifa who went to Evergreen College yesterday and sprayed, you know, silly string all over the fucking place and threw rotten fruit and shit. You know, who's showing up with the AK-47s? Who's showing up talking about we need to start putting Jews in ovens again? Who's the motherfuckers talking about black people need to be aborted so that we don't have to fucking deal with this? Richard Spencer talked about putting black people in concentration camps, and he's out here talking about he's a fucking victim. And of course, these Republican fuckers, they, you know, their response to all of this shit is to loosen the fucking gun laws. As I said earlier, this guy was a wife beater. He was waving guns around. He was a fucking antagonistic son of a bitch, regardless of his fucking politics. He was just another white guy with a fucking gun, you know, who was angry and couldn't control his fucking self and just went out and hurt a bunch of fucking people who didn't do anything to him. Yeah, I got my problems with the fucking Republicans too, but I'm not willing to go fucking hurt them. You know, I got my problems with the goddamn alt-right. I'm willing to challenge them, but I'm not willing to fucking jump in a pickup truck and go hurt any fucking buddy. But they do this shit. They get caught doing these things all the time. I mean, how many times has Glenn Beck talked about the Tides Foundation over there down there in California? And goddamn, two motherfuckers were caught. One of them actually shot at a cop and I think injured him and ended up getting killed. The other one, he had vest and weapons and ammo and grenades. And he was going to go down to the Tides Foundation and do what? You know, like the fucker who went down to whatever the fuck that pizza shop is. I don't even remember the whatever. Comet Pizza, right? Thanks. You know, Alice Jones is paying no price for this. No, instead he gets invited to Megyn Kelly. You know, Putin admits, yeah, well, you know, Russians probably, they hacked it, but we didn't tell them to do it. They did it because they were patriotic. But there's no Russian involvement, even though Putin just admitted it. And then he goes up on Megyn Kelly. So, you know, this is where we're at. And, you know, I feel the fucking pressure, man. You know, here it is. I got people telling me that, you know, I'm the one that, you know, with the problem because I'm not backing black people 100%. And, you know, I admit that we have fascists and I admit that we have a color fucking problem. And, you know, I talk about it and that we're not ready and that, you know, I'm wrong for doing this. Okay. So basically what I should do is allow you to keep going on in your fucking delusions, even though it was fucking me up too. All that angry talk doesn't mean shit if you don't have a fucking plan. My man, my sister, ease up on this shit because white people will take this and beat you over the fucking head with it. And see, and that's the other thing. You know, fucking, I know so many of you talk so much shit. White people this, white people that, blah, 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 blah. You don't know any goddamn white people. You go to work with them. You sit next to them on the fucking bus. You stand next to them in fucking McDonald's. You think you know them. You don't fucking know them. I said it before on this show, I say it again. When you're fucking going to funerals like me, when you're at the fucking deathbed of one of these folks, you know, when you're holding their fucking children and shit, because they trust you that goddamn much. And when you've been doing that shit for so long, you forget what it's like to be around black people, right? I'm being fucking real here. Then you can talk to me about this shit. And I'm telling you, not every fucking white person out here necessarily is a hater, but they're going along with the fucking system like you're going along with the fucking system within your microcosm. Because one, that's what you know. And second, that's where you feel fucking safest. And I'm not telling everybody to be kumbaya. That's not the fuck I'm saying. I'm saying you got to fucking realize what is and what isn't. Play chess, goddammit. Learn to distinguish between the whites and the blacks. And I'm not talking about skin color. As I just said, put shit in fucking context. This was a Latino police officer who did this. That's a discussion that the black community needs to have with the fucking Latino community. Trust me. The FBI broke up a fucking plot about 8 years ago in LA, and there's been several others since then, but they haven't been reported on because they put them within a gang context, and it is within a gang context to a degree. But there were several Latino gangs in California that had hooked up with the white supremacist movement down there. One of them, I can't remember which one, which is why I'm not naming anybody because, you know, what's the point? Do the fucking research. I want you to go out there and look it up. But the FBI broke up, you know, a fucking plan, a plot to kill black people in the state of California to clean it out for basically neo-Nazis and fucking Mexicanos. And supposedly the point was northern Mexicanos specifically who are talking, you know, La Raza, they're going to take California back. And they were willing
to hook up with the white supremacist movement in California, because, you know, the white supremacist movement wants Northern California for itself. So apparently, this Mexican group, which I hope is not connected to La Raza, La Raza, all right, because, you know, the black community has a good relationship with them, you know, but whoever the fuck these cats were, a lot of them were in gangs, and these were different Latino gangs, apparently. They got together with these white supremacists to do this. Now, they rounded them all up. I think there were only 3 murders that were attached to this, but there were other beatings, and there was some school riots and shit. There were some other killings that may have been drug or gang, whatever the fuck, but, you know, were more than likely connected to this. You know, in one of the cases I remember, two of the cases, a young girl was killed. She was on a tricycle or something with her brother, and these Mexicans rolled up and shot them to death. And a black man was beaten to death by several Mexicans who were chasing him. And he was screaming for help and screaming like, "What did I do? What did I do?" They caught up to him and they beat him to death. Now, in these cases, everybody was rounded up and prosecuted. But the bottom line is that it fucking happened. It fucking happened, right? And we're not talking about Chicanos who are political. And see, and this is one of the other goddamn things that I'm noticing too, is that a lot of the fucking folks that are talking a lot of this revolutionary shit, hate whitey bullshit, one, have never been fucking political in their entire goddamn lives. They know nothing about politics. They've never belonged to a political club. They've never followed a political ideology. They've done no reading. They might read the biography of Malcolm X or some shit if they have enough patience to do that. Most of them are just looking at cliff notes. I notice, because I debate a lot of these motherfuckers, and they don't know the most basic fucking things. So, you know, they know very little about Marcus Garvey. They know nothing. So, you know, like Unia, they know nothing. So, you know, even then, you know, if you say to them that the Crips and Bloods were actually, well, the Crips anyway, were a fucking offshoot of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, which got destroyed. Now, they can tell you by COINTELPRO, they can tell you that it existed, but they can't actually tell you what the fuck was going on with it, because if they did, they would realize, yeah, not just did the fucking Black Panther Party get destroyed, okay? Can they tell you how they fucking destroyed them? Can they tell you how much bad blood they were falsely spreading and shit between groups? And how United Slaves and shit got fucked up like that? How the Vice Lords in Chicago got fucked up like that? How about Detroit? How about Miami? How about Philly? New York? Newark, New Jersey? Gary, Indiana? That's a perfect fucking example, right? See, if you don't understand how they fucked you up, you wouldn't understand how they will fuck you up today. You know, ask yourselves, how did the Crips get started? And why there's so many different goddamn Crips? And why are they fighting each other, right? You know, I mean, it's my fault for not remembering the acronym, but, you know, look at the fuck up for yourself. That was supposed to be community empowerment. They started selling drugs and said, yeah, we'll use the drug profits and shit to support the black community. Of course, they didn't support the black community. They had a couple of breakfast program things I heard for like, you know, 6-8 months. They all fell, you know, people stopped showing up. Discipline fell the fuck apart. They stopped the reading. They started making money and they said, fuck it, let's just do dope. The same thing that Huey Newton was talking about. How did Huey Newton die? Right? Think about Huey Newton when he went in and think about Huey Newton when he came out. Even John Stockwell, former CIA case officer, said that. He said that fucking what happened to Huey Newton was a direct result of chemical fucking warfare. He came out of prison talking about, we're going to take over the fucking drug trade in Oakland. Right? We're going to take that. I mean, Bobby Seale has talked about this. So then we have, you know, no discipline. You know, the Black Panther Party splits in half. Then they, you know, fucking fall apart, right? Black Action Army, I'm sorry, Black Liberation Army, Blob pops up behind that, right? One of the incarnations anywhere, blah. They start robbing banks and fucking holding up people and kidnapping and shit like that. And even then, it wasn't the entire fucking army itself. It was, you know, fucking elements within it. But they were trying to function on an Irish Republican army model, frankly, basically. And if you look at Maroon Schultz, Russell Maroon Schultz, you know, he said, we took on an armed front way too motherfucking early. you know. Because, see, the thing was, even though the ideology was there, and it was Marxist, African Marxist with Locke, the thing was, they had no real sense of political offices and were really not being backed by the New African movement politically. I mean, you know, there was, you know, the usual solidarity things. And, you know, even though they're doing, you know, these, I mean, what? Negative, bad, illegal. I mean, they were certainly illegal. You know, you're not supposed to motherfucking rob banks. But, you know, that is what revolutionary movements throughout history have done, right? To fund their movement. Okay, so, you know, that got rolled up. That got smashed, you know. But what I'm trying to say is the discipline that even held Bligh together wasn't existing in the Crips. So they start selling dope and continue to sell dope and said, fuck it, we'll just sell dope. And because they were pressing on these other cats, that's how the Bloods goddamn came around. Now, how many fucking generations has it been? It hasn't been that long. You've lost a whole lot of goddamn people across the country. Not this motherfucking LA behind this shit. And but look. What happened behind that? Tookie Williams made it fucking clear. He started a lot of this shit and said, you know, man, we lost our way. And it started to spiral out of fucking control. And it still can't goddamn be controlled. But you want a revolution and you can't, and you don't want to deal with a situation like that. You'd rather say that these young men are misguided and I shouldn't talk negative about them. You know, the Crips and Bloods, they're trying to, you know, to make do with what's out here. I never said I didn't understand that. But I'm telling you that you're excusing this bullshit is bullshit. But you want a revolution. Excusing these pimps and players and shit out here, but you want a revolution. You can't have black porn and have a fucking revolution. You see. I'm not talking about erotica. That's somebody's. I'm talking about the industry itself. It's racist as hell. Alright? It's racist as hell. Look at the performers. They're in it for the money. And because they got into a fucking situation, many of them at a fucking point in their life that what else the fuck are they going to do? I mean, Wesley Pipes, I mean, he's on the record of saying this, that if he could have rapped, he wouldn't have done porn. He said if he could have rapped, he wouldn't have sold fucking dope. You know, he spent 17 fucking years in the pen, man. But y'all like Wesley Pipes because he's a real nigga, right? He's a real nigga. But yeah, he's admitted. He's got nothing else that he can fucking do with his life now other than this shit. This is what the fuck he will be remembered for. He's rolling with it because what the fuck else can he do at his age doing this shit? And yes, you know, he grew up in L.A. No, actually, he's from Louisiana, but then he ended up in L.A. where I think he started getting into trouble. You know, yes, the system around him was fucked up. Yes, white people are to blame for it. Okay. But I would like to be able to give a brother like that a different option, you know what I'm saying, other than what he ended up doing. And, you know, I don't hear that talk. I mean, yes, there's talk out here, but, you know, that's like one out of, what, 1,000 fucking black people that are really serious. You know, and then, you know, there's the Ben Carsons and whoever the fucks and shit, and they're complete fucking jerks. There's Jesse Lee Petersons with, you know, yelling white power and shit. Yeah, we got the audio. Yeah. You know, and so, again, you know, be clear, man. I'm not telling anybody not to fucking be mad. I'm not telling you not to hit the streets. I'm not telling you that the fucking, you know, call these racist motherfuckers what they are. And I'm certainly not telling anybody not to goddamn defend their fucking self. But really, you know, stop the revolution bullshit, man. Until you actually understand what the fuck that means. Because, you know, you're going to get this shit, you know, ratchet this shit up to a fucking thing. You know, they're going to use all of this against us. Trust me. And, you know, well, you a coward, you a punk. No, no, motherfucker, I'm smart. Because, see, I realize that when you fucking broadcast your goddamn intentions, they stop you. So, you know, go ahead and keep riffing and talking shit, you know, in the meantime. You know, a lot of you motherfuckers don't even know how to go to the bank and open up a goddamn account. A lot of you can't even do basic fucking math. And I'm not bullshitting about this. The reading comprehension of a lot of us, black and fucking white, is bad.
So until you fucking figure out those goddamn things, until you can tell me how the fucking medical corps is going to deal with the people, you know, who have to fucking cope with disease and perhaps the bullshit that you're talking about, you know, the type of, you know, body injuries and shit that you're talking about. If you really want to do your motherfucking revolution, are you ready for that? You got agricultural people who are going to figure out how to feed fucking people? Huh? You got scientists and shit that are going to be able to deal with, you know, incoming fucking diseases and so on. You're going to be able to take over these sorts of things? Where are the diplomats? Where are our politicians? I'm not bullshitting here. You know, do we have an energy czar in the black community that represents us? That maybe could address these cancer roles and shit where they're fucking doing environmental racism? No, we got a writer or two, we got a professor or two, and we got a bunch of ministers. Do we have a politician, a real motherfucking person who can say, yes, let's go to The Hague and fucking press this case? No. No. So until you fucking get that bullshit going, don't talk to me about motherfucking revolution. You're wasting my motherfucking time, and all you're doing is giving, you know, literally, political ammunition to the motherfucking neo-fascists. To use that shit against us, because, you know, now everybody who supports Senator Sanders right now, they're touting as a potential fucking terrorist. And if you think I'm joking, ask around. All right. White people are not backing folks on Philando Castile, man. You know, they'll back the grief, but the shit you're talking about, they're not going to support it. And you're like, oh, well, I don't give a fuck what they support. Well, you better. I'm not telling you not to proceed or whatever the fuck, because you're going to do whatever the fuck you're going to do. But I'm just telling you, you got no fucking plan, man. And you're out here broadcasting a whole lot of loose motherfucking talk. You think this shit is going to work out in your favor? It's not. It's not. So, you know, take this as another fucking, you know, tap on the fucking, you know, knuckle rap on the noggin for me, that you better start getting fucking organized. You better start educating your fucking selves. You better start thinking about the fucking future. And you better start asking yourself, what is it that I want this shit to look like? Just being mad and saying, you know, fuck Whitey, and, you know, the system ain't shit, and I just want a system that works, that's not politics. Because really what it comes down to is you want things to work for you, and you're not really thinking about how this shit has to work holistically. That's the problem. And if you think I'm fucking around, look at Israel. Right? You think they were able to do that just because the U.S. said, yeah, we recognize you? No, they planned for fucking statehood. They've been doing that shit for fucking generations. They were just trying to figure out what country they were going to fucking take. Because they knew they couldn't have a piece of Europe, even though Europe owed them a fucking piece of land. They tried Paraguay. They tried Uruguay, right? They tried Uganda. You know, they were looking at various fucking places. In the South Pacific, even. That's how desperate they fucking were. And you know, they finally ended up on Palestine because there was a political fucking reason to send in there. Churchill said, well, fuck, if we can get these brown people out the way and put a white goddamn government in there, all the better for me. He also had the British-Israeli movement to work along with him on that. How many of you know this motherfucking history? It wasn't like, oh, well, you know, we like Jews and they fought for this and they get... No, it was political expediency in the fucking West. And they made a deal. Like they made a deal with the fucking Kaiser. Like they made a deal with the Tsar. Like they made a deal with every motherfucking head of state in Europe that would finance and give them a legal fucking charter to set up somewhere. You know, you got to know this fucking history. Well, I want a black homeland. Okay, well, what does that look like? Where is it going to be? Who are you going to have to kill to fucking take it? Who are you going to have to disenfranchise in order to do that? Did you think about that? So, no, you know, until, you know, we have a real fucking discussion. I mean, I would like to see a real paper written on this shit by somebody who's really talking revolution. I'm not talking about a natural, you know, this is what we're going to do. I mean, a theoretical fucking paper. I would like to see it. Send it to me. fourthworldradio@gmx.pt. That's number 4th world radio at gmx.pt. That's the email address. If you really, really have something, write it the fuck down. I will look at it and I'll have you on the show to discuss it. You know, it's just, I'm old enough. I've been hearing this revolution talk for so fucking long, and you know what? It means nothing. It means nothing. The first fucking revolution, the first one you got to have is you. And waiting for a king or a queen or for Jay-Z and Beyonce to come fucking save you and shit after exploiting the fucking Black Panthers. And after Jay-Z saying that his presence is charity, you know, but he's your king, right? He's got $1.4 billion, if I understand that correctly, but yet he's not funding any goddamn schools. They handpick 10 or 8 girls or whatever the fuck that they'll send for a special program. But they're not putting up any funding for any fucking thing. They're not, you know, sending out a legal fucking team or helping or demanding that the rest of the Black intellectuals get their fucking money. I mean, intellectuals too, you know, but the money. Get their fucking money together and do what the Armenians do. Do what the Jewish community does. Do what the Chinese community does in this country. Do what the Greeks, the Russians do. How do I know? Because I deal with these communities. And they're fucking organized. You think the Vietnamese community can't get organized within 5 fucking hours? Are you kidding me? No. Sorry. I know it's possible because I'm seeing it happen all the goddamn time. But as I said, you got to understand the political fucking parameters of what's happening. So while we can say, well, hey, Israel was successful, you know, Jews were able to get themselves a country. Yeah, and look at the price. Look at how they got it. And look at why they were allowed to have it in the fucking first place. Because it was expedient to the fucking powers that be. They didn't give a fuck about Jews then, and they don't give a fuck about Jews now. You know, the young Jewish girl, I can't believe I can't, Anne Frank, sorry. She, you know, anniversary remembrance of her, was it this week or last week? But in any case, it really annoys the fuck out of me that we're still having these goddamn discussions in 2017, which means, you know, people who have read the Anne Frank diary haven't learned a goddamn thing. You haven't learned anything. Yeah, I mean, I say that to a lot of us who read, Malcolm X, the autobiography of Malcolm X. I mean, you know, you're reading this shit and walking away from it with what? Okay, you got a hero. And that's it, right? You know, the same thing with religion. You know, you talk Jesus all fucking day, but you don't do Jesus. So what good is the religion? What good is your fucking belief? It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. If you're not in motion with these isms, it doesn't mean shit. So again, anybody that fucking wants to take me out of goddamn context and I'm telling people out here to fucking go do something stupid? No. And I'm not telling people here not to motherfucking not do anything. Defend your fucking self. You have a right to defend your goddamn self. Your home, your fucking family. But don't talk shit about going out here and doing a revolution when you guys can't even fucking get it together. And you're still calling yourselves niggas and making intellectual fucking arguments about that. I mean, come on. Jews calling themselves kikes. The Hugo Chavez, the rest of them, they call themselves spicks. Come on, man. There's a reason why the Black fucking revolution, quote unquote, does not fucking get off the goddamn ground. You don't really know who the fuck you are. And you think that dashikis and dreadlocks and shit are going to stop something or magically bring you someplace. It's not going to happen, man. And I'm not decrying those things, but those are elements of the fucking culture. That alone is not going to bring you motherfucking freedom. You got to liberate your fucking mind first and start to realize that this shit is a lot bigger than you as an individual. You want liberation, you got to make this shit international. You're not at that fucking point yet. We were at that point in the fucking 70s. And they beat it out of us. And they sent our fucking leaders to prison. And they killed the others. So, you know, that's why we're at where the fuck we're at. I know that. I'm trying to get you to understand that too. This is The Angry Indian. And you are still listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Samantha Nock at Samiri on Twitter, halfbreedsreasoning.wordpress.com, and you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Too, baby. This is Uncle Tom, Commander-in-Chief of your Black Freedom Fighters in North America,
bringing you the latest news from your Black Underground. Hang on, brothers and sisters. Liberation is near, even if they do count our votes several times every 4 years.
Internet radio for
the spook who sat by the door. The controversial best-selling novel now becomes a shocking screen reality. The story of the first black agent in the CIA.
Raise your right hand and repeat after me.
For 5 years, he was their token Negro. He kept his cool and let himself be used. And in return, they taught him how to spy, how to fight, and how to kill. For 5 years, he was the spook who sat by the door. And then he turned the American dream into a nightmare.
This is not about hate white folks. It's about loving freedom enough to die or kill for it if necessary.
The spook who sat by the door. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Radio Insurgente. La voz de los sin voz.
Vamos, 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 vamos adelante, para que salgamos en la lucha avante, porque nuestra patria grita y necesita de todo el esfuerzo de los zapatistas.
Transmitiendo desde algún lugar de las montañas del sureste mexicano, en la frecuencia 100.1 en FM.
I'm gonna stand until I can't stand no more if I have to stand by myself.
The American people are the last people to wake up.
Prisons are becoming an integral part of the U.S. economy.
People of color organize critical thinking, strategic work, and direct action for social, racial, gender, and economic justice.
A world run by a handful of greedy bankers and CEOs who nobody elected can't possibly last.
People of Color Organize features intersections of race, politics, feminism, movement, class, internationalism, and theory.
This is about the Black Panthers. This is about the American Indian movement. This is about all of us.
Visit us online at peopleofcolororganize.com. Follow us on Twitter at POC Organize and Facebook at facebook.com/peopleofcolororganize. You can also find us on Tumblr at peopleofcolor.tumblr.com.
We're organizing against what we term genocide.
You can't bring up, one guy sent me a very interesting thing about Barack Obama and race. You can't bring up anything other than that suddenly he's African American. if you start to, you know, delve around the edges of, wait a minute, isn't he mixed race? Weren't we told that last year or whatever, biracial? Not allowed to say that anymore. Apparently, the mainstream media has dubbed him to be African-American.
Yeah, I was driving in today, and I was seeing, because I saw this piece with him on 60 Minutes, and I thought to myself, he's very white in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, gee, can I even say that? Can I even say that without somebody else starting a campaign saying, what does he mean he's very white? He is. He's very white.
When a Muslim without a birth certificate has taken over the White House, you need a good white former junkie to show you the direction that America needs to go in. Beck, it's What's for Demagogue.
This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Head on RadioNetwork.com, an internet-based conversation radio experiment. Available most easily at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a Listen Live button. Just jump right on it, and there you are. Or if you're on a mobile device, it's also easy to find us at TuneIn Radio, a nice app for your mobile smartphone, or Tuner Internet Radio, or Dar.fm, or Stitcher Radio, Streama.com. We are rather ubiquitous. I mean, if we got more every night, we'd be paying salaries, right? Head on RadioNetwork.com.
Fuck you, Trump. We'll see you on the streets. Am I disappointed? Yes. But am I surprised? Hell no.
It clearly shows what the country is made up of, what the country was founded on.
Darwin described the United States as a greedy, hypocritical, racist, white supremacist, evil, warmongering nation.
Donald Trump is just a symptom of a greater system that has basically f***ed up for my people for over 500 years.
To me, the United States was founded in violence, developed in violence, and violence is an American, U.S. American tradition.
The thing that's rattling around in my brain is all of this militarized police and the attacks and everything that's been happening happened under the Obama administration. And I can't help but question what might happen under a Trump administration.
Now we have a really strong enemy to organize against that causes us to say, hey, we gotta get our together.
Germany was having trouble, what a sad story. Needed a new leader to restore its former glory. Where, oh, where was he?
Where could that man be?
We looked around and then we found the man for you.
Land is happy and gay.
We're marching to a faster pace. Look out, here comes the master race. Springtime for Hitler and Germany.
Born in Dusseldorf, and that is why they call me Rolf.
Don't be stupid, be a smarty. Come and join the Nazi party.
We'll be right back.
This is Jonathan Colton, and you're listening to a podcast released under a Creative Commons license. CC, baby. Check it out.
Hey, everybody. It's Dr. Vibe, the host and producer of The Dr. Vibe Show at thedrvibeshow.com. At our show, we do conversations and provide information for black men and those who love them. So come check us out. Also at iTunes, and also selective episodes are featured at the Good Men Project, one of the most viewed websites in the world for men. So find out about black men and those who love them at The Dr. Vibe Show.
Nicely played. Sachin is off the mark.
घरेलू हिंसा में बाधा डालकर उसे रोको। बेल बजाओ। घरेलू हिंसा अधिनियम पर जानकारी के लिए bellbajao.org पर लॉग ऑन करें। ब्रेक थ्रू की पहल।
Yo, what's up? My name is Jasiri X, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really responding to the call, man, of my sister Rosa Clemente, you know what I'm saying? For Men in Hip Hop, really stand up and say, like, rape under no circumstances is acceptable, you know what I'm saying? Rape shouldn't be rapped about, it shouldn't be supported, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really feeling like, you know, especially after Rick Ross came out today and said what he said, you know, he didn't use the word rape, but he described a scenario in which, you know, he put something in a woman's drink and had sex with her, and she didn't consent. If you have sex with a woman and she didn't consent, that's rape. And we have to say no to rape. And beyond Rick Ross, whether it's Fox News or their viewers attacking Zelina Maxwell for asking men to stop raping women, whether it's Hollywood, you know, perpetuating, you know, this rape culture, you know, it's got to stop. It's really, you know, we got to take personal responsibility as men. My name is Jasiri X. This is One Hood.
This is Violent Fanon, and you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Recently, a young sister by the name of Ayanna Jones was killed by some pigs up in Detroit. Now, according to a news article, the report said that the murder was an accident. Now, I couldn't help but to notice that, once again, black people are demanding the same system for justice that committed the crime. Why we keep doing this to ourselves, y'all? Malcolm once said, don't ever expect a white man to give you justice in America. The only way you're going to get justice is when you make justice for yourself. So we need to realize that we will never get freedom by demanding it. What is the purpose of continuously asking our oppressors to do for us what we should be doing for ourselves? There is no such thing as a good oppressor. Where are the Bloods and the Crips? Where are the militants that constantly holler, bang for freedom? Where are the fists raising, RBG flags flying, rebels? You see, my issue is with my own people. We are the ones to be held accountable for these uncivilized acts that are forced upon us. I'll repeat Malcolm again when he said, if anybody puts his hands on you, take them off the planet. And isn't a 7-year-old sister's life worth that? So I ask brothers and sisters up in Detroit and anywhere else where a life of our own has been taken by these freaks of nature that call themselves men and women, are you going to rally and march and sing some songs? Will you pray and hope that the criminal, unjust system helps us? I believe that until we totally understand that their entire existence is a deadly virus towards our people, we will never truly define who our enemy is and fight accordingly. Otherwise, our unborn and their children will be continuing the same cycle of half-fought liberation. I pray nothing but the worst for them. Anywho, random African thoughts. Freedom after revolution, y'all.
This is APNS Public Radio.
Of the Geneva Agreements on Vietnam.
My name is Robert Cohen. We're in front of the U.S. Embassy in Dar es Salaam, Republic of Tanzania, East Africa. A demonstration is taking place by the revolutionary African students and university students against the U.S. policy in Vietnam. With me is Robert Franklin Williams, the president in exile of the New Republic of Africa, recently formed in the United States. Rob Williams is a U.S. citizen who left the United States in 1961, pursued by the FBI and the police of the state of North Carolina. He lived in Cuba from 1961 to 1966, broadcasting to the United States on his own radio program, Radio Free Dixie, and sending in copies of his monthly newsletter, The Crusader. Since 1966, he's been resident in Peking, China, where he has continued sending his newsletter, The Crusader, into the United States. Rob is considered one of the best-known leaders of the Black Nationalist Movement. Rob, I notice you're wearing a button of the of Chairman Mao Zedong.
Yes, I got it in Peking because the Cultural Revolution is going on there, and that I'm being supported by the Chinese people, so nationally I would support the Chinese people in their Cultural Revolution.
Well, I'd like to start this interview. I think a lot of our viewers, people in the United States, many may be familiar with the circumstances under which Robert Franklin Williams left the United States in 1961. You were a fugitive at that time. You were under, there was a warrant out for your arrest for kidnapping in the state of North Carolina, and I believe also for interstate flight by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Could you tell us very briefly what led to those things? Do you think there was any base for the charges, and are they still pending against you?
Yeah, well, according to their concept, I was a fugitive, but according to my concept, I was a refugee from racial oppression. But this case grew out of the fact that I had for many years fought against racial tyranny in the South, that I had fought against racial segregation, racial discrimination, and racial dehumanization. And I became an enemy of the power structure. And because of this, I became also an object of hatred on the part of the local power structure, and the local power structure through manipulation, because a local Klan lawyer was also Kennedy's White House aide. They were able to manipulate Washington. And
so just 1 second now. This happened in 1961 in August. At that time, you were head of the Union County branch of the NAACP.
Yes.
There were some freedom riders that had come to your city of Monroe.
Yes.
Right? And you had organized what you called a guard or self-defense force. What was this guard?
Yes, well, the freedom riders came for a different purpose. We had a standing guard there to defend the black community against white aggression. And this white aggression was primarily on the part of the Ku Klux Klan, backed up by the local racist police. The freedom riders came in to help assist and nonviolent demonstrations. These demonstrations were being conducted for the abolition of police brutality, the abolition of Jim Crow, of Jim Crow facilities, and we had a 10-point program wherein we had asked for fair employment. And
But you weren't, the Freedom Riders were nonviolent demonstrators.
Yes.
At this, you were not participating, though, in their demonstration, as I understand it, your guard, your people.
No, I refused to participate in these demonstrations on the grounds that I would not pledge myself to nonviolence, because I believed and I've always believed in self-defense. But I did ask the people, and they accepted reluctantly the idea that they would support these nonviolent demonstrations for a trial, because this was to be a trial to see if we had been in error with our self-defense policy and to see if nonviolence really had the power of persuasion against these white terrorists.
Now, this guard, though, that you had consisted of about 200 or 300 people who were armed. You had set up foxholes, defense things, and so on. Were you advocating violence then, or was this strictly a self-defense thing for your black community?
Well, I advocated violent self-defense, because I don't think you can really have a defense against violent racists and against terrorists unless you're prepared to meet violence with violence. And my policy was to meet violence with violence.
Oh, would you say that your policy was to fire only when fired upon, or were you going to go out and attack people who you didn't like?
Well, it is commonly known that trenches and foxholes are fixed positions, and these are fixed positions of defense, and this is what we had. But the idea was to protect our communities, because law had broken down and the police had refused to protect us. So there was nothing else for men who had self-respect as men to do but to protect their families and their homes.
Now, in this situation of Klan violence, of you setting up foxholes and trenches and so on and arming your neighborhood, what specific event led to this charge against you of kidnapping?
Well, actually, in July and August, we had had some violent attacks on pacifist demonstrators. And on August the 28th, on Sunday afternoon, that the Klan had recruited or solicited support from as far away as Georgia, from Georgia and South Carolina, thousands of Klansmen, Minutemen and other fascist and racist poured into the city, and they had said that they were going to crush this demonstration and that they were going to destroy our branch of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, and most of all that they were going to kill me and to destroy our branch of the NAACP. So we had an armed guard, and we had been arming people for quite a while throughout the community. So we prepared to defend ourselves. Also, the Klan had made forays and attacks into our community. They had stoned people. They had thrown missiles from cars, and had 14 women had been struck by these objects. And we were prepared to defend the community.
What specifically was the kidnapping charge based upon?
The kidnapping charge was based upon the fact that some white racists who had been riding around and agitating, and they had had a banner on their car the previous day stating that this was open season on coons, that they had come into a community where many of the people had relatives who had been imprisoned and beaten openly on the streets of Monroe, and these people had come into this community, and these angry people who were about a half a block from my house had taken these people out of a car, and that they had brought them up the block in front of my house, and they had called for me to come out. When I came out, they were threatening to kill them, and these were not people who were members of our guard. These were groups of people roaming the streets who had become angry, and these were people who were not under the discipline of our guard. And so the fact was that I had to come out of the house, and these people were, some were screaming and crying to kill these people, that they were calling them white beasts, and that they were had been responsible for Ku Klux Klan activity, that they should be killed. And I knew that with the tension as high as it was, that they would have been killed. So the crowd was gradually closing in on them. I had to come out. I came down my steps off the porch into the yard, and I started to forcing the crowd away from them so that they would be arm's length away, because I knew if one person in that crowd struck out at them, that that crowd was so angry it would have torn them apart. So,
now, just a minute. Now, you had not told anybody to take anyone out of the car. In fact, you didn't know what had happened until the crowd brought these people in front of your house.
No, well, this was a different crowd. The guard that we had, this guy was under orders, and this guard had been pulled back into a rear area waiting for a showdown with the main force of the Klan.
But you didn't tell anyone, or you didn't order anyone to take those two people out of their car?
No, there was no need to order anyone to take anyone out of a car. But first thing, we didn't have any facilities for taking anybody. Next thing, if there were enemies enough for any action to be taken, the idea was to use violence against them. But these people didn't use violence at this time. They only wanted to kill these people. And the only reason they didn't kill them was the fact that this woman, Mrs. Stegall, was in the car, because previous cars had passed through and they had been fired on. That I saw groups of men fire M1 rifles and 30 caliber rifles, Italian carbines, and they had tracer bullets, and I saw these bullets penetrating these cars. But in this case, because this woman was in this car, instead of firing on the car, that some of the people just took her out of the car and took this man out. And there was some question, some difference among the crowd as to what must be done.
But now, what did you have to do with all this?
Well, I didn't have anything to do with it, because it occurred a half block from my house. And I was in the house at that time, taking care of telephone calls that were coming in from many parts of the county and all over the city of people who wanted to know what had happened to their children who were on the picket lines, and also of people volunteered to join the Guard, and they wanted to come in to fight and make an all-out war and a showdown. But
Now, these two people were taken into your house, however.
No, they weren't taken into my house. When I came out into the yard, the woman, Mrs. Stegall, said that we have been kidnapped. And I said, well, here, lady, you're not kidnapped. You're free to leave anytime you get ready. And she said, well, if you will take us out, that we will be safe. These people will let us go if you will escort us out of this block. And I told her, no, lady, I'm not going to take you out of here, because I didn't bring you here, and I'm not going to take you out. And you're free to leave whenever you get ready.
Well, were you guilty of kidnapping? Did you physically kidnap or force these people to leave their car or enter your house?
They were taken out of the car by a group of people in the streets, and they followed me into my house. They had asked me to take them out of the community, and I refused to do it. So when I turned to go into the house to answer the telephone, they followed me.
Were they afraid? Was that why they followed you into the house?
Yes, they were afraid of the group of angry people, and these people were screaming that they should be killed, and I'm sure they would have killed them if they had stayed there.
So by following you into your house, they felt they'd be safer than out with the crowd. Now, did you make them stay in your house?
No, I didn't make them stay there. In fact, they wanted to stay because they had voluntarily followed me into the house, and they stayed there because they knew that that group in the streets, would have really killed them.
So you personally feel that the charge that you kidnapped anybody or caused them to be kidnapped is unjust. Is that your position?
Yeah, well, it's not that I feel that. I know that. I'm certain of this.
Now, so why is it that you then fled Monroe that night?
Well, the idea was to flee Monroe because there was no justice there, that I was leaving Monroe so that I wouldn't be in the community, because we thought it was going to be a big showdown and a lot of people would be killed, and they knew that I was going to be blamed for everything there. So the local people said that I should go away for a week or two until it was over and return.
Now, did you feel that your life was threatened? Is that why you left, or why?
Well, I felt my life was threatened, but that wasn't why I left. The idea was that I wouldn't be on the scene, and that they wouldn't be able to frame me, that anything that would happen, I wouldn't be held responsible, because it would be known that I was not in the community at the time.
Now, what happened to these two people that were in your house? Were they still there when you left, or had they been freed?
They were still there when I left, and according to the papers, when they left, they just left themselves, and they left free.
Were they harmed or what?
Well, according to the testimony of the people themselves, they were not harmed.
So, but you feel that this, it was the charge against you that you had caused them to, you and Mae Mallory and these other people had caused them to be taken out of their car and into your house, and this constituted kidnapping.
Well, this was their charge, but the fact is that none of the people who stopped them in the streets were indicted. That they only indicted the people they wanted to indict, and they weren't interested in any of the people. About 200 or 300 people stopped them, according to their own admission. But none of the people who were indicted were in the group that stopped them.
Now, who were the people who were indicted? I mean, what type of people were they? Why were they indicted?
Well, one was a white freedom rider from New York, John Lowry. May Mallory was a housewife, a mother of two children, and two local fellows, Harold Reap and James Crowder. And these people were actually students. They were youth. And they were also youth leaders. So the idea was not to punish anybody for a kidnap, not to punish anybody who had stopped these people, but they had certain people they wanted to get rid of in the community.
Now, what has happened to the other people, the ones that stayed in the United States, who were indicted on that kidnapping charge?
Well, they are living normal lives in New York. That John Lowry is working in a bank, and I understand that he is now a junior bank official. May Mallory is working in a hospital and is traveling freely. In fact, she's just recently been here, and she was issued a passport to come here. That the other two youths are also living in New York, and the trial has not, since it was thrown out by the Supreme Court of North Carolina on the ground of racial discrimination and jury selection, it has not been recalled.
So in other words, the original charge against you, the people who were indicted, who were captured, their conviction was thrown out by the North Carolina State Supreme Court, and they are presently, what, under indictment or what?
Yes, the conviction was thrown out, but they were re-indicted. And this is more of a threat, a form of intimidation, than an active case, because they were re-indicted, but none of them have been picked up to be returned to the state of North Carolina.
So is it your feeling that the state of North Carolina is not going to try to press this case?
Well, evidently not, because they didn't press it up until this time, and they seem to be only interested in me.
And this whole thing happened now more than 7 years ago.
Yes, more than 7 years ago.
So now, you fled, however. I heard that you were told that the sheriff was going to hang you, or your body was going to be in the town square or something, that they were directly threatening to kill you.
Yes, this was the chief of police, who said that in 30 minutes the state troopers were already coming to town, and that in 30 minutes I would be hanging up in the courthouse square.
Well, now, to make, I know it was a very complicated story, but in essence, you left Monroe, you got to New York and found out there was a federal warrant for your arrest for leaving the state of North Carolina.
Yes.
And you subsequently went to Canada as a fugitive.
Yes.
And then through a roundabout means through California and Mexico got to Cuba.
Yes.
Now, you were in Cuba from 1961 up until 1966.
Yes.
Well, why Cuba of all places? Why to a communist country so you could be accused of being a pro-communist propagandist instead of a real Afro-American freedom fighter just working for the equality of the American Negro people? I mean, why to Cuba?
I was given political asylum in Cuba, and I was there as an exile in Cuba, and I lived there as an exile.
Now, were there any particular Cuban leaders who gave you this asylum, or was it just, in general, the government there?
Well, actually, this political exile was given to me under the direct orders of Fidel Castro himself.
Why did he do this?
Well, he did this because, first thing, I had been a friend of Cuba. I had visited there on two occasions before, and the fact that the Cubans were convinced that under the racist laws in the United States, especially in the South, that it would be impossible for a black person to obtain justice. So they gave me this on the grounds that I couldn't get justice in a racist country.
Now, do you feel that the Cubans were using you to make propaganda against the United States?
No, I don't think they were deliberately using me, because there was some division in Cuba as to whether or not I should be allowed to enter there. And it so happened that Fidel himself took the position that I should be. And actually, he had to go against some of the party officials to reach this conclusion. So it wasn't a matter of just allowing me to be there on the grounds of propaganda.
Now, you say he had to go against some of the... You mean that the Communist Party of Cuba opposed your coming to Cuba?
Well, not the Communist Party as a whole, but some of the members in the party and some of the other people in Cuba and also those who had close connections with the U.S. Communist Party, because the U.S. Communist Party was opposed to my going to Cuba, and they tried to use their influence in Cuba to prevent my entrance into Cuba.
Why was the U.S. Communist Party, why do you feel they were opposed to you going to Cuba?
Well, the first thing was that I didn't belong to the U.S. Communist Party, and I was considered a black nationalist, and they opposed black nationalism. So they didn't want me in Cuba because they felt that they could no longer speak for the black people in America if they really had a genuine black person from the movement who had been in struggle. And this would have taken away some of their authority in Cuba. So they didn't want me there because they felt it would be a conflict between black nationalism and their class theory.
Now, excuse me. Now, the arrival in Cuba, your arrival in Cuba, gave you certain facilities. That is to say, the Cuban government permitted you and helped you in publishing your newsletter, The Crusader, and also in making radio broadcasts to the United States on your radio station that was called Radio Free Dixie. Do you feel that giving you these facilities was more than just asylum, but in fact was helping you make propaganda for black nationalism?
Well, actually, it was because the Cubans had made it plain that they support the liberation struggles of the peoples of the world, and they considered our struggle no exception. And the fact was that I had asked for this time and this program, and some of the party officials did not approve of it, and it was necessary for Fidel himself to intervene in this. And some of the party officials felt that I should be under the regular Cuban party propaganda. But Fidel Castro took the position that I was a freedom fighter from the United States, and that as a black American, that I knew more about what the propaganda should be than anybody. So his position was to leave him alone and to let him determine what he should do.
Now, while you were in Cuba, your wife, Mabel, and your two boys managed to get to Cuba from the United States, and they lived there with you.
Yes.
You had your own house there in Cuba, furnished
yes.
by the Cuban government. Now, did you ever feel that what you were doing was in any way act of treason or unpatriotism towards your country, towards the United States of America, or had you abandoned America? Did you feel you were now a Cuban, or what?
Now, I don't believe any man who lives under tyranny in a government can ever be truthfully accused of treason. Treason can only come when a man is entitled to the rights and privileges and he is protected by his government, and then he betrays that government. Then he can be accused of treason. But when the government betrays its trust to its people, then the government is what is guilty, is the guilty party to treason. And I consider the government of the United States to have failed the black people in America in protecting the rights of black people in the enforcement of the Constitution. So it wasn't a matter of treason, but it was a matter of constitutional betrayal on the part of the United States of America, on the part of the government and the so-called decent people in America.
This is The Crusader. This was your monthly newsletter from Cuba. It's the issue of May, June, 64. I mean, there's a cartoon here, Afro-American Revolt, The Racist USA, The Torch of Retribution. And we see what appears to be an Afro-American lighting fire to buildings. Now, if you were going to put out something of this kind, don't you think that it would have been better to do it in a neutral country so that people couldn't say, well, this is just anti-U.S. communist propaganda coming from Cuba, that you've been a tool of the Cubans?
Neutral country? As far as the black man is concerned, there's no such thing as a neutral country in the world. Either a country is for justice, either a country is for the liberation of the oppressed, or that it is against it. That there's no such thing as neutrality under justice. That either you've got to be for justice or against it. Now, as a black man in America, I went to the countries that would accept me. Now, since I've been in Cuba and China, I've tried to go to France, I've tried to go to Sweden. I expected Sweden to be a neutral country. I expected France to be a neutral country, but I discovered that they're not neutral, that they're with the United States government. I was in Canada. I had hoped to stay in Canada. I had been there for a month. But then I discovered that the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, had entered the search for me, and that the response of the United States government was seeking to return me to the racist United States.
But
even though the Royal Canadian Mounted Police had entered the search for you, and later on you couldn't get into France and Sweden and places like that, why did you feel it necessary to send out something that was that is so obviously inflammatory and an agitational pamphlet? Didn't you realize that by it coming from Cuba, even though you were publishing it yourself, that people in the United States would say this is just anti-U.S. communist propaganda? They wouldn't read what was in it.
But it makes no difference what the people in the United States say. If they were concerned with justice, they would be speaking out against the racial injustice there, and it wouldn't be necessary to publish such publications as this. The fact is that I belong to an oppressed group, an oppressed class, an oppressed race, and it is my duty to agitate for the liberation of these people, for the freedom of our people, no matter what the enemy may say, no matter what impression I may give. Now, Cuba was a place that I could freely work, and a person who is truly interested in justice must work from wherever he can. So I worked from Cuba.
So you do not feel that your publications in any way caused the Watts or Detroit or Newark riots?
No, I feel that Washington and the American people, the apathy of the American people, at least those in the power structure, actually responsible for these riots. No, that I'm a victim of those same conditions. So it is the duty that I'm duty bound to oppose this any way that I can, by any means necessary, and to advocate a policy of elimination of these conditions. And I don't care what the cost is or what method I must use. And I'm happy to know if this method is proven successful, then I'm happy. I feel happy about it that I am accomplishing my objective.
Well, getting back to Cuba, what were conditions like for you in Cuba? You had a long interview with Che Guevara before he left Cuba, just shortly before he vanished. Why did you leave Cuba? There have been stories that you felt threatened in Cuba, that you had serious problems after being in Cuba almost 5 years. Why did you leave there? What was your situation? What did Guevara have to say to you, and why did you leave?
Well, I didn't feel threatened in Cuba. Fact was that I wasn't being as effective in Cuba as I had been, as I felt that I could be. Fact was that the Cuban government, or some faction in the government, had started to sabotage my work, and I discovered that they weren't really interested in the elimination of these oppressive conditions in the United States, that they wanted to create an image as revolutionaries, but they didn't want to do anything. They didn't want me to do anything, that they just wanted to support me there, or pretend to support me, without really taking any concrete steps, and they did everything they could to keep me from promoting black nationalism and an effective struggle for our people. So I left.
Yeah, but they did give you radio broadcast facilities and facilities for publishing and getting, what, about 40,000 of these things a month into the States. How were they sabotaging you?
Yeah, well, in the beginning they had helped me. But actually, it wasn't the government that started to print these publications. Actually, the Cuban workers, the printers, agreed to do this, and these publications were being printed before the government even realized it. And they were even being sent into the States. But then after the government realized it, the government did start to support this, because they saw it as a good propaganda thing. But the thing about it is the government tried more and more to patch up some differences with the United States government. More and more they started putting pressure on me. They started sabotaging. Now, they didn't sabotage my life there. And they supported me up until the end as an individual, but they didn't want to do anything that would arouse the antagonism of the United States government.
Now, just a minute. You say that the Cuban government was trying not to antagonize the U.S. government? Why was that?
Yes, they were trying not to do this. Evidently, they were trying to reach some agreement on the exiles in the United States, the Cuban exiles. And
you mean to keep the exiles from attacking Cuba, they would stop you from attacking the United States?
That's what actually the United States government had already started intervening, and they had started restraining the Cuban exiles in the United States. So I suppose it's just my assumption. I don't have any concrete evidence, but I assume that this was reciprocal and that the Cuban government also started restraining me.
Well, what about your relationships with Che Guevara? Did he sponsor you? In other words, were you doing what he thought should be done, like starting
one too many Vietnams, whatever his slogan was?
Well, I had had a long discussion with Che on the eve before his disappearance, and he had said that they had some differences in the government. He had said that he differed with them, and he thought that I should receive more support from the Cuban government, and that the Afro-Americans in the United States should receive more support.
Now, so, what was his difference with the other people in the Cuban government?
Well, according to what he had stated, was the difference in the revolutionary belief, the fact that he believed in a revolution, he believed that Cuba should support the revolutionary movements, and that more and more the Cuban government was not supporting the revolutionary movements. So this was his difference, basically.
Now, when you say support the revolutionary movements, do you consider the movement for equality for American Negroes to be a revolutionary movement?
Yes, well, it's developing into a revolutionary movement, and the fact was that we could see this potential. And everybody knows that that there can be no political freedom or economic freedom for the black people in America without revolutionary conditions or without revolutionary activity.
Well, now here, in your Crusader newsletter, you started out with this letterhead, this man, medieval crusader on horseback. However, you've changed it in the last couple of years to the machine gun and the torch. Now, I get the impression from this, and many people do, that when you say revolution, you mean violence, you mean arson, you mean destruction. You just don't mean a change in the American way of life.
Well, this change took place because of changing times. That when I first started with the Crusader Man on Horse, those were different conditions. And they were the conditions of people who believed in Gandhi, people who believed in Christianity. And these boycotts and demonstrations were led by a lot of church people.
Martin Luther King and so on.
Yes. And so we believed in that. But this is a matter of evolution, that I didn't decide to change this masthead myself. But many people wrote in, many of the black people in the black communities who were distributing this, and they said that they didn't think this was an appropriate symbol for the new movement, for the new mood. And so this is why we adapted this new mask head with the machine gun and the torch.
Yeah, and this was, but you changed this after Watts, that is to say after 1965 was when you changed.
Yes, because this was the new era of the bullet, of the fire and the bullet. So it was time to change. This was no longer just a religious or philosophical crusade, but this was a new era that had entered the stage of history.
Now, when you say new era, you mean that you arbitrarily decided that the bullet and the arson's torch, the Molotov cocktail, that this was going to be the way you were going to express yourself?
No, the people in the streets decided this, and they wrote to me, and they suggested, and some even demanded, that I get in step with this new tendency, because it had come, and they knew that I was with it, but they didn't think that this was giving the right image, this masthead, so I changed it.
Now, when you left Cuba, was there any particular incident that forced you to leave Cuba? Were there any particular individuals who forced you to leave Cuba?
There were many incidents and some certain individuals, because the Cuban people always supported me, the revolutionaries supported me, the military men supported me, but there were a few people, a few leaders around Fidel, like Comandante Vallejo, Comandante Piñera, and Osmani Cienfuegos. These people had tried to sabotage the Afro-American struggle, and they were pretending to be party people and pretending to be great leftists and Marxist-Leninists, but all the time they were sabotaging what I was doing and doing everything to make my struggle ineffective and my stay uncomfortable in Cuba.
Now, when you say sabotaging, there has to be a reason for this. If you think they were trying to sabotage your work, your radio broadcast, your publishing of your newsletter, why do you think they were doing this?
I think they were doing it because there had been some infiltration into the Cuban intelligence, and Piñera was also one of the intelligence officials, and he was either being misled, being fed misinformation. He was working directly for the United States and for the CIA.
You think that, the CIA was that deep into the Cuban government that they could surround the people, touch the people surrounding Fidel and actually stop what you were doing when he wanted it done?
Well, I don't think that. I know that because I had close contact with them and I know what they were able to do.
Do you think the CIA did this or was it someone else? Do you think maybe the Russians did it?
Well, it appears that the CIA did it because all that was done was pro-American, and it would have benefited America more than anybody else or any other country. But it could be that it was a joint operation, or it could have been some other country. But I know that it was done because I was the victim of it.
So their specific actions caused you to believe that you must, that you had to leave Cuba.
Well, if I wanted to carry on my struggle for the liberation of the black people in America, if I could live true to what I believed, I had to leave Cuba. But I wasn't forced out of Cuba. That I had a choice of remaining there. But I could have remained in Cuba as a socialist Uncle Tom. But I didn't see any difference in being a socialist Uncle Tom than in being an Uncle Tom in capitalist and racist America. And I'm not cut out to be an Uncle Tom, no matter who is for.
Now, why did you go to China, to the mainland of China, what we call communist China in the States? Why didn't you go to a neutral country at this time?
Well, I had tried to go to Sweden. I tried to go to Sweden from Cuba. I tried to go to Canada. I applied for a visa. I applied to immigration, the Canadian immigration. I filled out a form, and they rejected me. There was no place else to go but China. So the Chinese people and the Chinese government received me with open arms, and I'm grateful to them for this. And I would also always be grateful to them. But where else could a black freedom fighter go in the world but to the People's Republic of China?
Now, when you arrived in China, this was in 1966, did the Chinese offer you facilities such as propaganda facilities, broadcast facilities, newspaper facilities? In other words, were you able to keep putting out the things that you've been doing in Cuba?
Yes, that I had the opportunity to do what I was doing in Cuba and more. That the Chinese only stated that they supported me and they supported the black people in America, and that I should ask them what I wanted to do, should tell them. And if I had any special requests, all I had to do was to make these requests. And this was the position of the Chinese government. This was the position of the Chinese people, that they didn't take any active part in this, but they left it up to me as a matter of principle, the principle that they support revolutionary people and struggling peoples in the world.
Now, are you working for the communist Chinese government? Are you their agent or a spokesman for them today?
No, I've never been a spokesman, I've never been an agent, and I've never been on their payroll. I live in China as an exile. They have given me political asylum as an exile. They support my struggle. They never dictate any policy to me, and my propaganda is completely divorced from theirs. And anybody who studies the situation closely can see that there is some difference in my propaganda and Chinese propaganda. And the Chinese allow me to produce my propaganda without interference. And they have never asked me to change my way of thinking. They've never tried to pressure me into making any decision that I didn't want to make.
Yet you wear a Mao Zedong button. This would indicate that you have accepted the philosophy of Chairman Mao and that you are a supporter of it.
Yes, that I believe that he has done a lot of good for China, that he's brought the Chinese people a great distance in a short length of time. He is one of the great leaders of history. And that Chairman Mao means more to more than just, means something to more than just communists in the world. That he is also a defender of the rights of the poor, of the oppressed.
Now, do you mean by that that Afro-Americans, that American Negroes, should follow the teachings of Mao Zedong?
Yes, they should follow the teachings. Now, because of the fact that Chairman Mao says himself that in every situation that the people must determine what they can use and what they can't use, and that nothing should be forced from the outside. That the people in their respective communities must decide and must fashion the methods that they use. So I suggest that from his own teachings that they follow this. This means that any struggle in the United States need not necessarily be following the blueprint of the Chinese Revolution, even the Chinese philosophy.
Yeah, but don't you realize that by wearing a Mao Zedong pin and by saying that Afro-Americans should follow the teachings of Chairman Mao, that you in fact substantiate the claims by people in the United States that the uprisings, that the burnings of American cities are fomented, organized, and supported by the Red Chinese?
I learned long ago not to be too much influenced and concerned with what people say, especially in a negative way, in this negative vein. There are many people in the United States who say that I'm a kidnapper, but I've never kidnapped anybody. There are some people who say I'm a criminal, but I've never committed any criminal act. So I can't be concerned. Look, I'm a refugee. I'm a victim of all kinds of racial oppression, tyranny, and terror in the United States. So why should I be concerned with what they think about me or what they call me? My first concern is liberation. My first concern is justice and freedom. And it makes no difference what they call me. It makes no difference what they think, because in the final analysis, they are going to have to face reality. And the reality is that America is not God, America is not the end of the earth, and it doesn't matter what the Americans think. In the final analysis, the truth will come out, and they're going to have to face it, no matter what it is.
Now, just a minute. Are you admitting, or are you acknowledging that the Red Chinese are supporting, fomenting riots in American cities, and maybe even sending in arms and money to people to destroy America?
The Chinese, as far as I know, and I think I'm closer to them than any other American, and I've never known them to send in any money nor arms to America. That the Chinese support the Afro-Americans morally, and the Chinese have asked what the Afro-Americans want.
Now, this is a pamphlet that you wrote in China. It's called Listen, Brother, by Robert F. Williams, and is directed at American GIs, at Afro-American GIs fighting in Vietnam. Now, you've used things in it like photographs of American cities, of rioting, of fighting between police and civilians, and also photos which are quite terrible of some of the corpses from, let's say, this one is from the Newark rioting, a man shot 17 times by the police. And you have statements in here referring to black and white Americans saying, both of us together can't beat the Viet Cong. The man, meaning white America, wouldn't have a possible chance with us against him, too.
Well,
I mean, what do you mean by this?
First thing, this pamphlet was written in Peking, but it was printed in New York, the United States of America. Next thing is, those pictures are in there. Yes, they're on display. But I didn't commit those crimes. The black people in America didn't commit those crimes. Those crimes were committed by white America and by white America's running dog cops who murdered innocent people on the streets of America. And if these pictures are so horrible, then how much more horrible and terrifying are the actual acts are visited against our people?
And yeah, but you're asking here for American soldiers to commit treason, to actually turn and fight against their own country.
I'm not asking them to commit treason. I'm asking them to stop betraying humanity. I'm asking them not to commit treason against humanity. Man's first duty is to his brother. Man's first duty is to humanity, not to governments, not to brutal, savage governments and oppressors. This was what the German soldiers said. The German soldiers were obeying the Third Reich, the government of Hitler. So this is no excuse, this thing about treason, to threaten people with treason because they refused to be brutes, because they refused to resort to the methods of tyranny. No. This is not asking treason. This is asking humanity.
Yeah, but wait a minute. You're not only asking people not to fight the Viet Cong, you're asking them to take up arms against the U.S. government, to destroy the U.S. government. That's more than just not being involved in brutal acts. You're asking them to commit brutality against their fellow Americans.
That's asking to put an end to tyranny, just like in the colonies of the United States. When Britain was visiting tyranny on the colonies, it was not enough just not to serve the crown, but the idea was to stop the crown from oppressing others, to eliminate tyranny from the soil of the colonies. And this is what is being requested here. It's not enough for an Afro-American not to kill Vietnamese. but it is his duty to prevent this war machine from crushing his own people, from crushing his people in the streets of racist America. And the idea is that the black man, if he's going to fight, if he's going to be a soldier, he should fight for the liberation of his own people. He's got no business in Vietnam. And the idea is that he is fighting for his own enemy, for the rights of his enemy to oppress others, to destroy others. But he is not fighting for his right to live as a human being or his mother in the United States of America. And what I'm saying is, if they force him into battle, if they force him to kill, then the person, the people he should kill are those who are oppressing him. And those are the white Americans of the United States.
Now, wait, now you say all white Americans, everybody with light skin, should be killed? What are you saying?
No, I'm not saying that all white Americans should be killed. But I'm saying that those who are killing and murdering Vietnamese in cold blood, the same as they're murdering and killing black people in the streets of Washington, in the streets of Detroit, in Chicago, in Los Angeles, in San Francisco, I'm saying that they deserve to be killed by black soldiers who have gone to kill others in their name and on their behalf.
Now, but what you're saying, if people listen to what you say and try to do what you say, this will result in the death of millions of people. This will result in the death of most black Americans.
You mean it will result in the death of white people in America? Because our people have been being killed in America with impunity for almost 400 years. We've lost millions of people. In fact, Lord Bertrand Russell has said that more Afro-Americans have been exterminated in the United States than Hitler exterminated Jews in Germany. So when you start talking about losing millions of people, you're not talking about black people, you're talking about white people. And if white people insist on murdering our people and practicing genocide against our people, then they have a right to be murdered. And this becomes our duty to end this.
Yeah, but now, don't you think that being out of the United States for almost 8 years now, that you're a little out of touch with what's been happening? There have been great strides made in civil rights. There have been many bills passed. The work of late Reverend King was essential in these things. And white Americans are trying very hard to try to do something about this situation. There's no genocide being committed. There are no concentration camps or gas chambers. You've been involved in this great cultural revolution in China. Perhaps this has gotten you a little out of touch with the United States today, because I'm sure that there are a great many white Americans that think that what you're saying now is way out.
Out of touch? Is it way out that Reverend King is dead? Who killed Reverend King? Reverend King is dead, so I'm out of touch with reality. It appears to me that conditions have worsened. It appears to me that I'm behind time, that I'm too moderate in the view of this, because here is a pacifist, one of the great followers of Gandhi, a man who advocated love and nonviolence, has been shot down in the streets of racist America and killed like a common street dog. Now, and then I'm supposed to be moderate in my outlook. I'm supposed to be merciful. This is asking more of me as a victim than has been asked of the oppressor.
Well, but you're calling for an attack on hundreds of millions of people based upon the act of one man.
But not a matter of an act of one man. That mankind is responsible for his fellow man. That society is a collective. Is a collective community, and you cannot be aloof in a community where you live. The German people allowed Hitler to lead them down the drain. They allowed Hitler to rage and to act like a maniac, and they didn't take any position whatever. They supported Germany. They supported their government. And as a result of this, we can see what happened. Now, the American people can't hide behind the excuse that they are not doing it, that they are not committing these crimes. But they are actually responsible for these crimes, because these crimes are being committed in the name of the American people by a government that states it is a government of the people, for the people, and by the people.
But the American government didn't kill Reverend King, or for that matter, Robert Kennedy or President Kennedy.
But it tolerated the death of Martin Luther King. It didn't prevent the death of Martin Luther King. And the 14th Amendment says that every citizen is equal, is entitled to equal protection under law. Now, The J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI says that they know every time some conspiracy is being formulated in the ghetto. They know about plots they claim against leaders like Roy Wilkins and Whitney Young. They know when the statues are going to be blown up. They know when people are planning to set off bombs. But they didn't know when the President of the United States was about to be killed. They didn't know when Martin Luther King was about to be killed. They didn't know when Bobby Kennedy was about to be killed. Now, what is all of this about? All of this good protection and know-how and protection of people like Roy Wilkins and Whitney Young and these people, and no protection of the Kennedys and the Kings.
Well, now, do you think that but the Kennedys aren't Afro-Americans? They're white Americans.
Yeah, they are white Americans, but they have run afoul of the rightist forces in the United States, the same as Reverend King.
Well, then aren't your enemies certain forces in the United States and not white society as a whole?
There are certain forces in the United States, but the fact is that when you have a community that is becoming degenerate, and that is being overrun by degenerates, and that degeneracy is becoming an order of the day, then no honest man can take an inactive position. No honest man can be neutral. And if honest men are neutral, then they are not neutral, and they are not honest, but they become accessories after the fact and after the act and to the act.
All right, now, you have been in China. You have been given honors and position that no American citizen, practically no private person in the world has ever had. For example, you have been allowed to stand next to Chairman Mao on the Gate of Heavenly Peace, the Capitol building in Peking, and actually take the microphone and speak to 2.5 million people. Why do you think that you as an individual, you, Robert Franklin Williams, have been given these honors and this position, this incredible support, at least moral support, if you claim no arms, by the communist government in China?
Because I'm the first black victim of racial oppression and tyranny to have been able to escape this network of tyrants. The first one to land on a friendly soil, or to land on soil where they are opposed to this type of tyranny. So it is only natural that the Chinese people would want to hear what I've got to say. Not only do they want to hear what I've got to say, but they think others in the world who are victims and potential victims of the same injustice, the racist oppression and injustice, that the people who are potentially targets of this should know the nature, the true nature of America.
Now, in China, and I realize it's impossible to discuss this in a short period of time, this would take hours, but in China, you've been living through this great cultural revolution that they're calling it, which is in many ways torn Chinese society apart. People in the States don't know much about this. What's going on in China? What are the forces involved? What is this cultural revolution? Can you just say it very simply?
Well, it will actually be impossible for the people in the United States to understand the cultural revolution in China or anything about China, because they don't have enough background to understand what's going on. But actually, basically, what has taken place is that the Chinese youth and the Chinese workers and peasants and soldiers, under the direction and teaching of Chairman Mao, are trying to develop a new society that will mold a new kind of man, a new kind of individual, the type of individual that the Christians claimed they wanted to produce many years ago. And that is that there will be men who will be honest, men who will be devoid of ego, men who will work for the collective good of all, men who will not put their selfish motives ahead of those of their fellow men. And this is basically is what they're trying to do, the objective. Now, there's nothing that says that they are going to succeed. There's no certainty of this. In fact, Mao Zedong himself has said that there's a possibility that they may lose, but this is what they're trying to do. And they're having much trouble and friction because there are some who support socialism, some who support communism, some who support Mao Zedong, but who don't think that they can overcome this feeling of personal gain, that they can overcome ego. And some people are opposed to this because it requires a great deal. You must try to imagine what it requires of a person to think more of humanity, to think more of the people in his community than of himself and his own immediate family.
You mean they're trying to create a society where people won't work to get more pay or won't work to get bonuses? In other words, the whole direction that Russia is going in, this Liebermanism and things like that, is to let workers participate in factory profits. Are you saying that the Chinese are trying to motivate people just by idealism? That certainly would cause a conflict.
Well, as to the people themselves, you see, this is the strange thing about it. It's not the government trying to force the people to accept this philosophy, but many of the people, and especially the peasants themselves and soldiers, are saying that this must be done. This is the type of society they want, and that they are actually striving to produce the type of personality wherein man's satisfaction for his work will come from the satisfaction of creating for the good of all, for the good of humanity. That he will derive his compensation from the fact that he knows that he is contributing to humanity.
What do you see for the United States? You're an American. You still say you're an American citizen. What do you think is going to happen there, in the States?
Well, I think great turmoil is going to take place there. And what we've seen today is just a sample of what is developing in the world, a new attitude that there's much contempt and much hatred for America because of its imperialist attitude, because of its capitalist attitude in dealing with others, because of its racist attitude. And people in the world are beginning to get tired of this. And more they're beginning to complain. And more they're beginning to see the United States as the devil power of the earth. And not only the people outside, but our people inside, the black people, are beginning to see America as serving serving as the devil to make life miserable for the good people of the world or the struggling peoples. So I can foresee the day when, unless America changes, and unless it changes soon, it is going to be completely destroyed. It's going to be wiped off the first face of the earth, because it is impossible for a nation to serve the devil and to do such evil to others and exist. And it was Abraham Lincoln himself who said that a nation divided among itself cannot stand, and America is divided.
Now, but when you say wiped off the face of the earth, there's no power on earth that will dare to attack us, or we can destroy Russia or China or anybody else that tries this. What are you talking about when you say wiped off the face of the earth?
Well, when I say wiped off the face of the earth, I mean that part of it is going to come from within America. America is already about to destroy itself. America now is in such a sorry state that even the President of the United States is not safe, unless he's a rightist, that a man who was Attorney General, a man who was an aspirant for the presidency, can be killed openly in the streets.
But that's not the destruction of the United States.
No, but this is the beginning. This shows that there's something seriously wrong. And this shows that the society is becoming so degenerate and so many explosions are taking place among the people that it can't possibly stand. Plus the fact it's suffering defeat in Vietnam, and more that the peoples of the world are beginning to resist, and they're going to resist more. And all of these forces brought together, including the degeneracy inside the country, is going to bring about its destruction. That's all it is to it.
Yeah, but you're talking in the abstract here. In your newsletter, in your radio broadcast in the past, and in many statements that you've made, you've been quite specific. You've said that Afro-Americans are going to blow up American factories, dynamite Hoover Dam, destroy the railroad lines, destroy electrical power lines. You tell how to make Molotov cocktails, how to attack the police. Aren't you, in fact, advocating, preaching, that Afro-Americans should try to destroy American industry and bring chaos to American cities?
I'm preaching for my people the same thing that George Washington and Patrick Henry preached for their people in another time, in another day. That I'm preaching that we must use any means necessary in order to liberate ourselves, and that we have no right to submit to tyranny. I'm saying that we must become men, and we must resist, and we must use any means, no matter what it requires. And the fact that I'm more concerned with the liberation of people, I'm more concerned with humanity and the human flesh than with buildings, than with the loss of property. You see, this is the cold capitalist version of the fact that we must save the property. But I'm interested in saving the people, and the black people have a right to be saved as much as anybody. And unless white America is willing to liberate the black people and to stop oppressing us, then if America must go up in smoke, then let it go, let it go, let it burn.
for the best in indigenous chat radio for intelligent, politically aware Aboriginals. Listen to Fourth World Radio, hosted by the Angry Indian, and broadcast by Aboriginal Press News Service, public radio over the World Wide Web, to the international indigenous community, and all ships at sea. Learn more at aboriginalradio.wordpress.com.
Parlement pour monsieur sénateur ak député ou donc analyser étudier ou qui ça qui passe mais pour faites là-dedans avant que le voter mais ça budget rectificatif là il voté li et dans chambre député hein, vendredi qui se passé là vendredi qui était 16 juin 2017 là. Et je dis en même, d'après ce qui se dit, chambre députée, t'as dû acheminer avec passé mais qui fait là dans le Sénat républicain. Et député souhaité yo t'aimer que Sénat vote rapidement dans le même thème, donc yo même. Alors question qu'a posé c'est et avant, il y a là que il a déposé le budget rectificatif là, alors que le gouvernement a fonctionné sans aucun problème, et que qui côté que le jeune corps pour la fonctionner, puisque le budget, le Parlement pour le voter. D'ailleurs, c'est vendredi que ce passé que la Chambre députée a proposition sous lui, et le Sénat a beaucoup de parle pour qu'on dise un mot. Donc, il y a un pile de dépenses qui est déjà faite. C'est qui côté que le gouvernement jeune Cob, eh bien, pour la faire des pensions, caravanes, et parlement mignon pour poisson, etc. C'est côté que le jeune Cob, ça a pu dépenser, hein, tenant compte du fait que le budget rectificatif, là, pour que j'aime voter. Donc, c'est question que, en pile monde, pas des moindres, donc, à poser. Il vient de signe. Madame, monsieur, n'a proposé, non? N'a pas tout à l'heure.
L'argent a rentré, Timoun a grandi. Ouais, bien, miracle. Ouais, aujourd'hui et demain.